Hey, everyone. Welcome to Talk Nerdy. Today's Monday, October 1st, 2018, and I'm your host, Kara Santa Maria. Now, I say this every week, so of course I'm going to say it again. I want to thank those of you who have made Talk Nerdy possible this week. Remember, Talk Nerdy is and will always be 100% free to download, and that is for several reasons, but not least of which is the support from listeners just like you. I do sell ads on the show. That helps make the paychecks go around. No, but really, I do the show mostly by myself. You know, I write it, I produce it, I book it, I blah it. But I also do rely on some support. I have an incredible assistant named Noelle Dilworth, who helps quite a bit with managing all of the organizational aspects of the show. And also, I rely heavily on the incredible editors at Pro Podcast Solutions. But I got to pay for these things. And so I do that through selling ads, but also through my Patreon page. So if you go to patreon.com/talknerdy, you'll see what I'm talking about there. You can pledge your support for the show. You can pledge as little as 50 cents, as much as, well, I won't even say, mwahaha. But if you do pledge at a certain level, you get a shout out at the top of the show. So this week, I want to thank Rob Schreck, Pedro M. Rosario Barbosa, Phil T-Bear, the Zombie Drummer, David J. E. Smith, Jeffrey Perez, Charles Payet, Jafe, Gabriel Felipe Jaramillo Gonzalez, Brian Holden, and last but not least, Jeffrey Sewell. All right, guys, this week is a really fun one. Once again, only 2 weeks later, I had the incredible opportunity to have a one-on-one, face-to-face conversation here on Talk Nerdy with, I'm happy to say, my friend and also literally one of the funniest people on the planet, Allison Becker. She's an incredibly talented actress and comedian and producer. She writes and she's so incredibly funny. You guys probably remember her as, what was her character's name? Yes, Shauna Malway Tweep. She's the longest running guest star on Parks and Recreation on NBC. But you may have also seen her on Californication, The League, The Newsroom, The New Girl, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Kroll Show, Conan, Colbert Report. Oh my God, she's been on everything. And not only that, she has this really cool company called Access Improv that really helps with confidence, communication, collaboration, to teach improv comedy to non-actors, to non-improv people, so that they're not scared, so that they work together and they kind of come out of their shell a little bit and learn some great skills, maybe even in SciComm. So guys, without any further ado, here she is, the incredible Allison Becker. Allison, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited.
I'm excited, and I'm excited your dog's in the room.
Oh, I know. I'm excited that you're here in person because, wait, do you live near me or did
not
you have
too
to drive far?
Larchmont.
Oh, we love Larchmont.
Larchmont's the best.
Larchmont is the best.
Let's just talk about Larchmont.
Let's talk about our neighborhood. There's something I was watching the other day, and they referenced Larchmont, and I was surprised. Oh, it was The Prophet.
Oh, really?
Do you ever watch The Prophet?
No.
With Marcus Lemonis?
And they really referenced Larchmont, L.A., not Larchmont, New York?
No, it was Larchmont, L.A., because they brought some failing business owner to L.A. to take them somewhere.
Okay.
And they were walking down Larchmont, and there was a super cute little kid who had a lemonade stand, and they called it Larchmont Lemonade. And the kid knew more about P&Ls and ROIs and like all sorts, like was teaching, yeah, the person. And it was in Larchmont.
Well,
we recognized
there you go. There is a lemonade, the restaurant on Larchmont Boulevard.
You're right.
That little kid now owns it.
It used to be a Vietnamese restaurant a long time ago.
Yes. Yeah, it went through a lot of things.
It did. I love Larchmont. We went there. We almost bought a house there. We found a house there before we found this one.
Well, you did a great job. Her house is great, guys. I know you can't see it, but it has beautiful views.
Thank you.
It's all white and clean, and I love it.
It's a bit neurotic. But yeah, we did. We found a really lovely house in Larchmont, and it's so... I used to live at Melrose... No. Yes. At Waring and June.
Yep.
So
right
I was...
Me.
Yeah, I was technically in Hollywood, but...
But you'd say Larchmont.
I would say that I live in Larchmont with a Hollywood discount.
Well, I'm always like, I live in Larchmont, Hancock Park, and people are always like, what? And they imagine like one of those mansions. And yeah. I'm like, no, I live in a tiny condo.
But it's so great. It's such a great area.
Because I'm a New Yorker, so I can walk everywhere, which is fantastic.
So as a New Yorker, I'm surprised you don't live in Silver Lake. I don't know why. I'm just making that assumption. That
a lot of New Yorkers move to Los Feliz or Silver Lake.
Yeah, because it feels more like New York.
It does. But yeah, but I still like that little, I like to be central, first of all.
Yeah.
Because East Side's great, but it's a little far for auditions and stuff.
It is far. The nice thing about East Side is that we are by the freeway. And when I lived in Hollywood, mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, it takes forever to get anywhere.
Do you guys love hearing about traffic in
it's
LA?
Like the Californian.
I'm going to take these off. Is this going to mess you up?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't.
Yeah, guys, I took my headphones off. I'm just trying to update you on what's going on.
In case if you couldn't hear the sound of the headphones being removed.
I want you to be in the room with us.
So you mentioned auditions. And I have to say, so I think that most people who know you mm-hmm. probably know you. Probably the thing that most people know you from is Parks and Rec.
Yes, that was the biggest thing I've ever done. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I get like recognized from the most.
Which is really funny because you were a regular guest host on Take Part Live, which
yes.
is where I met you. It was
yes.
a TV show I did ages ago. And there's so much we could say about that. Maybe we will say on air. And I had never seen Parks and Rec the whole time I was on TPL. And then like a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, I was really committed to being on the elliptical machine. And I was like, I need a really good sitcom a la The Office. And so I was like, everybody always says Parks and Rec is good. I watched it. I fell in love with it. And I was like, oh my God, Allison is all over this show.
It was so fun. That show is so amazing. I mean, I love that show for so many reasons. First of all, it's funny. It was well written. Also, it has a sense of humor that is like, I feel like everyone of multiple ages loves for mm-hmm. some reason. And I think they must be promoting it again on Hulu or Netflix or something. Cause I feel like people are talking about it more. yeah. Those like 17 cent checks. But like people are coming up to me more. So I feel like, especially younger people now are coming
cool.
up to me more. So
yeah,
I hope it's because people are more interested in politics and stuff and they're seeking out shows like that.
I think a lot of people have kind of like rediscovered it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Recently.
Like, I always knew it existed, but for whatever reason, back when it was on air, I couldn't commit to it. Like, I think I was maybe still in school or something.
You were just having commitment issues.
I was having
in
commitment
general.
Issues, even with my TV shows. But then I was able to watch it and I was like, yes, it's a brilliant show. You're right. I think that all ages can relate to it. It's self-deprecating without ever being negative.
Agreed. Which is a hard line.
Yeah. Like, it actually builds the characters up and is actually in the end a very positive thing, which I think we need more of.
I agree.
Yeah.
Plus it has a female lead, which doesn't hurt.
Of course. Who's also brilliant. And also, did she write most of it?
She produced it.
Produced, okay.
Yeah. And I don't know if she wrote any of the episodes.
Megan Amram was a big writer.
Yes, Megan Amram was a big writer.
Big female writer.
They had amazing writers over there. And
lots of diversity on air.
Yes, exactly. On and off air. And mm-hmm. also, everyone was just good people, which is so rare in this industry that you find a show that is a good show and has good people behind it. And I know that's a bummer for people who don't work in the industry to hear, but it's even more of a bummer for us because a lot of these shows, people are like, I love that show. And I'm like, well, you don't want to know what I've heard about the writer's room.
Or like, I love that show. Like, we will so talk about TPL in a minute. That was such a fucking nightmare. That was like, you know what?
I was only there to pop in, so it was fine for me. But
TPL,
I don't know day to day.
TPL actually launched this podcast. This podcast
really?
Was born out of the suffocating, depressing oppression that was TPL. So I'm going to, long story short, this.
Okay.
Because
I was so impressed with you guys at TPL. But you, long story short, and then I'll give you my view
okay.
as an outsider.
I'd be so interested, especially after I tell you
okay.
I'll tell you. So the showrunner of that show, may he rest in peace, he passed away.
Oh, I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So I thought you were just like saying that.
No, like he actually did pass away. He's and he's very young, which is very sad.
Oh,
and
God.
I had very strange feelings when I found out about that because this is like a full-on Me Too situation.
Oh, no.
Like,
oh,
yeah.
God. I didn't know any of this.
Yeah. And this was the first time in my life that I really fully understood what the word gaslighting meant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was hired to be an equal part co-host with Jacob Soboroff, mm-hmm. who you guys probably know. He is the like really sweet, really affable, lovable, kind of nerdy guy who wears glasses on MSNBC.
Exactly.
Doing all the border reporting right now. If you've seen any of the reporting about the kids that are separated, like Jacob is really running that. Yeah, he's doing awesome. And I love Jacob. He's my brother from another mother. And so we were both hired to co-host this show. And it became very apparent very early on that the showrunner did not want me in that position. And so I was very quickly relegated to like a sort of
sidekicky.
Okay, okay.
You know, like it was okay, like yep, Jacob's yep. show, and I was, and so it'd be little, you know, and a lot of little things would happen. Like there would be times when I would be working with staff, working with the writers and stuff like that. And then I would be like, hey guys, maybe we should do this. And when we meet, let's talk about this and blah, blah, blah. And then he would pull me aside and be like, you know that nobody here likes you.
What?
Yeah. And when you talk to the staff that way, they're all like rolling their eyes and they're all like, you know, talking shit behind your back. And I just think you need to be really careful. And for months, I internalized all this stuff that he told me and I never thought to ask. And then one day there was a thing. It was like not even important. Like he sent us an interview from Terry Gross because we had a big interview coming up. He sent us an interview from Terry Gross and said, hey, let's model after this really good interview. Okay. And Jacob replied all and was like, yeah, except like a super fast forwarded version. Because it was a shorter segment. And then I replied all because it was my interview. Jacob wasn't even going to do it. It was my interview. And I was like, okay, great. So team, and it was like the two writers, the producer and the writer that were going to, hey team, maybe we can get together on Monday. We can talk about strategy, blah, blah, blah. I'm really excited about this. And then he took me into his office and reamed me out for that email.
He was
like,
oh my God,
they don't work for you. You're treating them like, and it was crazy. So I went to my producer who I was working with at the time. And I was like, hey, I'm really sorry if tonally something came off. Like, you know, the showrunner just reamed me out and I didn't realize, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And that's when all the chips started. I was like, I just kind of was always under the impression that, and they were all like, what are you talking? We love you. Like, you're so nice to us. Like, we all get, we have such vibe.
And you're
together.
Working as a team and you're doing yeah. your job.
And for months, I thought that everybody hated me on the show and that I was like a cancer on the show. And it was like therapy. It was, I mean, I brought it to the therapy room every, it was crazy.
And did you confront the guy?
Oh, yeah. And I confronted the entire organization. I confronted all of the network executives about it. And it got to the point where once it was all out in the open, I was treated so poorly on the show that there were times I heard from a good friend of mine who was kind of the next in line. And she would start running the show. It was a live show. So she would start running the show behind the scenes, like coming into our ears and stuff like
right.
You know, the IFBs. And that he would be like, I can't stand the sound of her voice. I'm not fucking waiting in the control room today. Like, it was insane. Like saying that in front of all the crew, like just poisoning
oh my
the well.
God.
Yeah. So I, it was crazy. I was completely gaslighted. I hated myself for months, you know, coming up on years. And I was a very squeaky wheel about it. And then I got fired.
I had no idea any of this was going
and
on.
And here's the really fucked up thing. Ultimately, everybody got fired because the show got repackaged by a different production
crumbling.
Company.
Yeah.
The only people they kept were Jacob and like one or two of the staff, but everybody else got let go and they brought in a production company and rehired all new talent. They fired me 1 week before they fired the entire staff. So I was on this weird island where they didn't tell me why. And they fired me. The showrunner got to be in on it. He got fired a week later. But during my firing, he had like an evil grin on his face the whole time. It was the only time I've ever been fired from a job. And
oh
I was like,
God.
I was like crying. And I was like, I don't know what I did wrong. Nobody ever came clean with what. And so I still don't know if it's because I was a squeaky wheel. I don't know if it was like his last wish. I don't know.
Oh my God. I didn't know about any of this.
Yeah. And so at the time I was podcasting with Joe Rogan and he was like, Kara, if you start a podcast, you're your own producer. Nobody's going to poison. Like you get to talk about what you want to talk about. You won't be relegated to the sidekick. Like when we did panel, I would just read tweets. That was my job, was to read tweets.
Yeah. Well, I coming in as an outsider, I didn't see any of this.
That's
genuinely.
So great.
Yeah. And I don't know at what point in this drama I came in. I don't know if you had confronted him yet or not.
I think you came in periodically throughout the whole thing.
But I did. Yeah, I probably
you
did like a dozen over the course of the time. Sometimes you were there. Sometimes you weren't.
Because your job was that you would come in when either Jacob or I were off.
And exactly.
You would do that
fill role. In for the other person. Yeah. And then I was on as like a panelist a couple times. But I remember being like whenever I would fill in for either you or Jacob, I would go to your like writing meetings and stuff.
So you saw the length of the day.
Yes, I saw the length of the day. But the first time I was in there, I was so impressed with both the intelligence and the assertiveness of both you and Jacob. Mm-hmm. I was always like, oh, I don't know if I could do this because you guys were just so on it. For you guys who've never saw the show, which is probably most
everybody.
Of you.
Oh, by the way, our viewership was lower than my podcast listeners.
But it was a news show,
yeah.
But it was a live news show, and it was very, like, socially conscious.
Very socially conscious. It had comedy writers.
Exactly.
It was, you know, it was woke.
It was woke, and it was a good idea for a show.
But it was counter-programmed against The Daily Show.
Exactly. So, like, okay.
On an expanded cable package.
But I was just so impressed with how knowledgeable everyone was about the news. Like, I remember feeling, like, dumb. I was like, God, I need to read the news more.
Oh,
like,
I felt the same way when I started, and it just becomes second nature. It was part of the job.
I figured.
Yeah.
But it still was, as an outsider, it was very impressive to see how well-read you all were and how just the conversations at the table. It made me feel like I was back in New York. Like, I was like, oh, these are the intelligent dinner conversations I wish I had been having.
And also,
like, here it's just like, who's your agent? And I'm like, oh, shut up.
It was a smart show. I will give you that. And also the talent in the writing and producing staff on that show, they were very young and very smart.
Yeah. And that's what I saw coming in as a guest. And, like, I should say that I have been very lucky in that I've worked in this industry for many years, but I have been always a bridesmaid, never a bride, in that I haven't, like, had my own show or haven't, like, had a series regular on a show. I've been, like, the guest star on shows. So because of that, I will often pop in, even, like, on Parks and Rec, like, pop in once every few months and do a spot and leave. And most of those experiences have been amazing. But every once in a while, I'll pop into a show, and because I'm just there for the day, everyone will all of a sudden just take me as, like, a therapist.
Oh, no.
And they'll be like,
such a nightmare.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And the makeup department will be like, I fucking hate the lighting department. And the lighting department will be like, God, the production on this. And, like, everyone will just lay gossip onto me. And I'm just like, I'm here for the day.
Oh, no.
I don't want to take this on.
And there's so much drama.
There's so much drama.
Yeah. I think the saving grace of TPL was that the person who ran the show was incredible at building a show.
Mm-hmm.
So he hired amazing people. The problem was that there was a very flat org. It was kind of like, I'm in charge. There's no structure otherwise.
Yeah.
There was no lead person, no senior producer, there was a head writer, but really that didn't follow suit. So it was like, I am the guy who runs everything and everyone answers to me. And it became very difficult for people to navigate.
Yeah,
to create that way. And also, he hated women. It was very apparent that the women on the show really struggled with him. Yeah. And there were two people in particular, myself and one of the producers, who I think we just reminded him of his ex-wife.
But it really is interesting because, you know, we talk about this, we're talking about it now more as a society, thankfully, about how women are treated in the workplace and in life. And we like to say and think that it's changed and it's moving. And I like to think that too. But then you hear these examples and I go back, and the crazy thing is, we as the victims are brainwashed just as much, if not more, because we, like you said, you believe that. You really were gaslit past tense. You were
totally
gaslit.
Yeah. No, I completely internalized everything.
And I've done that. Like, now that I have become more aware of this issue, I've thought in the past about relationships and jobs and things and realized, oh, that was gaslighting.
Oh, yeah.
I was totally valid to make that point, or I was totally had the authority to bring that up. And I'll look back on it and rethink. And I hope that women, that younger women now are coming up and being aware of it. I think they are, because it's being talked about more.
But I also think that we need to see more, like, women showrunners, women camera ops, women, you know,
oh,
like,
absolutely.
Because then
absolutely.
There's people on staff that you can talk to, and you can be like, is this normal? Or is this, cause sometimes it's so hard when you're, like, the only woman there, or
which is a lot.
I mean, there were literally, two very good examples. One, which was, like, pseudo-sexual, but there were literally times when I would walk out in a dress, like a tight dress, you know, my wardrobe style. And he would be in my ear, right? Because there's an IFB.
I'm already hating this.
And he would just be like, oh, you look really good tonight. And those are the kinds of things. And you're like, thanks. And then one time I was wearing...
Also, you're about to do
a live show. For an hour, by the way. And one time I was wearing pants and a button-down shirt and, like, a tie. And I had my hair really tight to my head, like, in these cool braids. And I thought it was kind of, like, sexy and powerful and cool. And he told me, you look way too masculine. And then he went above my head to not above my head, because he's above my head, but he went to the network execs and told them that line in the sand, there's a mandate that Kara can't dress like this on air. And so it was mandated from network that I couldn't wear pants or wear like masculine clothes.
So it's crazy. Also like I've hosted so many shows and the amount of feedback on my wardrobe, whether it's like too cute or not cute enough, and the amount of feedback on the man's wardrobe, which is none, just zero. I never heard feedback on any male wardrobe ever.
Oh no, Jacob dressed himself.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Like Jacob's wife is...
she's a stylist, right?
Yeah. Well, no, she's not the creative director, but she's high up at a clothing
right,
line.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so they're always going to like fashion week and doing... And so he just wore that line.
Yeah.
And no one ever said anything. And I mean, you know, it's the same thing every day. It's just a different color tie, a different color jacket. But yeah, for me, it was like obsessing over how I look every day. Oh, those tights. Oh, that eye makeup. And I'm like, guys, who gives a fuck? So there was that. Another time when it was really obvious is that we were literally talking about the panel that day was about women in positions of power in corporate America and how kind of that thing of like... it was very, what was her name? Sheryl Sandberg, like lean in kind of vibe. And it was about how if we, you know, act too strong, then we come across as a bitch. And if we, you know, blah, blah, blah. And literally he's saying these things. It's like, is this is Kafka-esque. Like I am like in a funhouse mirror.
But they don't, you don't realize it.
No. And this was,
he doesn't realize it. Yeah.
Of course he didn't. This was weeks after there was a panel about women scientists. And I was not allowed to lead the panel.
Jesus.
Because apparently when I lead the panel, I make people uncomfortable.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It is this weird phenomenon of like, and this is not excuse them at all.
No.
But they don't even realize they're doing it. And like I said, sometimes we don't even realize it's being done to us.
Because we reinforce it.
Yeah. And we're so used to it. It's all we've ever known. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, my dad, bless his heart, will say things like, if I bring up that I feel like I was untreated failure because I'm a woman, he'll say things like, oh, well, no one's out to get you. Why do you think everybody's out to get you? And then I'm like, maybe I do think everyone's out to get me. Maybe I am complaining too much. Yeah. Like why? You know what? I can tough it out and I'll internalize that. And he's not even gaslighting me intentionally. Mm-hmm. He's just like, that's how he sees the world. You know, he says he's in his 70s and I love him, but he'll say things like, well, I'm not sexist. I've had a female boss before. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's like, I'm not racist. I have a black friend. It's like, no, you can still be racist. Yeah. And he'll just say things like that. And I'm like, oh, you're trying. You're better than a lot of other people.
So true. And sometimes that's all I want to see is like when somebody's trying.
Exactly. You know? Or makes a change. Because I will say that he has, both my parents have like for their age and for who they are, they have made their little progresses that really mean a lot to me.
Are they New Yorkers?
They're born and raised in New Jersey.
Okay, yeah.
Which was where I spent most of my childhood.
Where?
In New Jersey, a really small town called Alamuchi.
Alamuchi. My boyfriend's from Montclair.
I know Montclair, yeah, yeah. My dad went to Montclair, like, night school.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. I don't know Jersey Montclair that well, State. But I'm like, ooh, I have a thing.
Yeah, I'm a full Jersey girl through and through.
He said when he was growing up, he would say things like, water.
Yeah, I would say water.
Walk the dog.
Yeah, walk the dog. Yeah. It comes out when I'm tired or drunk or if I'm talking to some other people from Jersey.
Did you change it on your own or did you take like diction?
No,
like
I think I just lost it.
Okay.
I never set out to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few words like water that I set out to change, but mostly, no, it just kind of went away. Supposedly my parents still have an accent. I don't hear it, but my friends are like, oh yeah, they do.
Same for me. Cause I'm from Texas and apparently
and
my parents like,
but we don't hear it.
Yeah,
right?
My mom says like diabetes, like Wilford Brimley, like, you know, they have this like way that they talk and my dad wears cowboy boots and I just never thought that was
amazing.
Weird.
Well, you did say one word. My best friend's from Texas and she says insurance the way you do, which is insurance.
Yes. Insurance. And we say umbrella.
An umbrella, yeah.
Yep.
And she also says pen for pen.
She does pen. Yeah. And they also say oil instead of oil.
Oh, I've never heard that one. Say it again.
Oil.
Yeah.
So weird.
Do you get it when you go back at all?
I never
say y'all?
I say y'all.
Okay.
I've always said y'all. But I feel very strongly that grammatically y'all is an important word because almost every other language has
like a vous or
vosotros.
Yeah. You're right.
Vosotros. Yeah. But my sister, my mom, my dad, they all sound really, really Southern.
Oh, that's
and
so
I
funny.
But I didn't even as a kid.
I wonder
weird,
why.
Right?
Yeah.
So did you feel like you had it and you lost it or you never really developed it?
I had it a little, but not as much as other people. Did you do theater growing up?
No, but I was a singer.
Oh, that's probably why, right there.
Yeah, it's a lot of diction training.
I didn't know you were a singer.
I was for years.
I'm so jealous of singers. That's such a skill I will never have.
It's so funny, though, because I don't use it. People always ask, too. They're like, do you still sing? I'm like, in the shower. Like, what do you mean, do you still sing? It's not like guitar. You can't just be hanging out with your friends and be like, I will bust out singing, you know? It's like,
yes, you can.
No. And also, you don't want to be that person at, like, karaoke who, like, actually sings, because that's fucking annoying. You don't want to be the Allison. What's her name? The character on Girls.
Oh, Allison Williams.
Oh,
characters?
She's so awful.
Like, I never watched that show.
She's one of those like performer types who's like, I'm so good. And she's and you're like, ugh, it makes me so uncomfortable.
Just stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to see me tap dance? No.
No, nobody wants to see you tap dance. Were you a theater kid?
I did like theater in school. I always auditioned for the play and did the play.
So did you know you were gonna be an actor?
I wanted to be an actor or a writer or a veterinarian.
Love it.
And I am now an actor and a writer. Full stop.
You love dogs.
I love dogs. I'm obsessed with dogs.
So am I. I can't help it. Oh. I love that about LA too. It's such a dog city.
I know it is.
They're everywhere.
I really do wish though that we were more like Europe and that we let them into restaurants and stuff.
I know. It's like some places are cool about it. A lot of places, they say they're not cool about it on the door. And then you walk in and there's like 10 dogs.
Exactly. Yeah, even so some banks and stuff. Mm-hmm. You just like walk in and they don't say anything, which I respect. Yeah. And also I've noticed like Targets like that.
Totally. Yeah. It says like, no dogs. It's like corporate policy. Yeah,
but they've never done anything.
Yeah.
Thank you, Target.
I love Target. Can I just say that Target's my favorite? I have friends where like growing up, I have a friend named Kelly who lives in LA now, but we grew up together. We've known each other since third grade. And from the time we were young, like if we were bored, we would go on Target runs together.
I remember going to, which they obviously have this section at Targets, but going to pharmacies, like drugstores, mm-hmm. because they have like makeup and hair dye and like everything was like a run.
A run. And it's like you're hanging out for like 2 hours. You're shopping at Target. You're exhausted after.
You ever shoplifted?
Totes? When I was a kid, yeah. I totally shoplifted.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I did it a couple times, but it was like, my friends did it more than me, and I was always like way too neurotic, and I was always like, oh my God!
It's so scary. It's so stupid, and it's so scary, and it's so not worth it, but yeah, there was a little
era. You ever get caught?
Never got caught.
I had friends who got caught.
Oh, that's
and
so
they
scary.
Got caught like on a big, like a big day.
Did they
it was
go
like
to jail? In the
they didn't go to jail. They were like 13. Yeah, because like that's when basically when I stopped.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when I stopped, guys. I stopped. I swear I'm clean. But two of my friends did like a whole mall run. Ooh. They went to Sam Goody, which is a music store.
Why did people always steal CDs?
And well, they were stealing. Do you remember cassette singles?
Oh my gosh, were they small?
They were like $3 each, and they were just like a single. It was just one song.
The cheap thing.
Because they didn't have the
The security device.
Exactly. The other ones were like CDs. I don't even know how or if they sell CDs now, but they used to come in these like giant plastic things that had to be removed. They were like a foot long.
Because kids stole them all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. But the cassingles, you could just take. So they stole like $30 in cassingles. And then they went into, they got caught in like a Macy's on the camera. And then they saw all their.
Oh my, their pockets were just so
their
full.
Their booty from the day.
That's so crazy. Yeah. It's not, you know, there was a short period of time before I started going to raves.
Yeah.
I was a big raver kid. And before I started going to raves, I dressed like a raver kid, but didn't know what a rave was.
Right. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And my friend and I met up with this group because I was like a nerd and they were like, oh, you're a candy raver. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And they're like, you should come with us to a rave. But there was a period of time before that became like a subculture thing that I was into and I would dye my hair and I had the big pants.
Yep.
And they were really easy to fill the
pockets.
Yeah,
exactly. It's terrible. They're coming back. So if you want to get into it.
Are they coming back?
I heard they're coming back.
Oh my gosh. I'm so unaware of like fashion trends. I feel really out of the
loop. I'm just same. I feel like fashion now is like just wear whatever you want.
I love it.
Like I feel like skinny jeans, wide leg jeans, like whatever you want.
Yeah,
it's
no one
in.
Cares. It's true. And also like thank God for athleisure.
Oh my God.
It saved my life.
Right?
I'm wearing it right now.
And you look great. She looks great, guys.
You're so sweet. I love your bow.
Thanks. I have a very like 1960s bow in my hair.
It's very sock hoppy.
I don't think it is. I don't know why. I also found an old Pops watch.
What's a Pops watch?
It's this.
I like it. It's like jelly.
Yeah.
It's like a jelly watch.
I can't get the thing to stand right, but it's a Pops watch and you can pop them out and put a different one in.
Oh, so it's like a swatch.
It
but
is
a big swatch.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Where'd you find it? Like at a vintage store?
No, it's mine. I found it in
an
old box of crap. Yeah.
That's awesome. See, but you can do that. Like, I love that. Like, the 80s is very in right now.
The 80s. But here's the thing. I feel like The 70s came back mm-hmm. with like bell bottoms and platform shoes. Love it. Then the 80s came back with like bright neon colors and stuff. And now the 90s is also kind of back with like chokers and
oh, you're right.
floral shit.
Floral shit and like the high-waisted, very short shorts.
Exactly. So like eventually the comebacks are going to catch up. Like, I don't know if you guys know how math works, but like especially eventually like you're going to run out of things to throw back.
Maybe
to.
We'll go back to like Victorian style.
We might, right? Or you'll just like do the 90s again. Yeah. Like, I don't know how that's going to work.
What is the 2000s?
Right.
Was there a style in the 2000s?
Well, I didn't think there was a 90s style, but then once you get far enough away from it, you realize it. So you need enough distance from it.
Yeah. My so-called life was very 90s, right? That's what I think of when I think
also,
of 90s.
Also, like, grunge was
grunge,
very 90s.
Grunge, yeah. Totally.
And that's kind of come back. Like, I'm seeing kids with, like, flannel shirts tied around their waist.
That was, oh and my I'm God, like, that was so my jam. And overalls with, like, the cropped shirt underneath. Mm-hmm. And then you could see, like, that you would wear the boys' underwear.
Yeah, that shit is boxers. Back.
Yeah. I kind of don't love it.
No, because
I kind of feel like it shouldn't come back. It was bad then.
Like baby doll dresses with like sunflowers on them. That's bad.
You're right. I have a friend who dresses. You're so right.
But
yeah, not a fan. But you know, that's kind of that's a fun thing sometimes about, you know, I've never acted. You are an actor and you've played a lot of roles, right? Because would you consider yourself a character actor?
I think I would consider myself a character actor. I guess I didn't really understand what that was until recently. And I'm like, I think that's what I am because I'm usually like a guest star where I pop in and do something that's like a little more, a little bit of a caricature sometimes.
Well, yeah, like you can really convert yourself because there are a lot. Okay. When we think of A-level multimillionaire, like stars, celebrities, blockbuster celebrities. There are two camps, I think. And maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm doing acting a disservice and I've never taken acting, so you can
also you should
me.
Know that I never treat acting with a reverence that other actors do. We get paid to play pretend. I'm fully aware of that. It is preposterous.
It's such a good job. It's so cool. And so when I think of these like high level, whatever, I think of two camps. I think of the people who truly transform themselves, like the actors, right?
Like who will like lose weight for a role.
Totally.
And like,
the Christian Bales there who
becomes the
somebody else. Yeah. Or even like the Helen Mirrens or these.
Yes.
And then I think of people who basically play themselves every time.
Yes.
Like Tom Cruise. He always plays himself. Not that he's not talented. He's incredibly talented, but he's...
Wait, can we talk about Tom Cruise for a second?
We totally can.
Okay. Tom Cruise is a nut job.
Of course. Scientologist.
Exactly. Tom Cruise is a fucking movie star, and he is so good at his job.
He's such a movie star.
And I'm so sick of people ripping on him. I think he's so talented.
He is so talented.
He's a nut job. I get it. He is so talented. He does those stunts by himself. I go to Mission Impossible on... opening night. Like I went this
one. He does those stunts by himself.
Oh my God. He does stunts by himself. I feel like
he's also like not that young anymore.
He's not. I don't know if you saw the last Mission Impossible.
I didn't see it.
It opened on a Friday. I was there Thursday night, the night before.
I love that.
And I applaud in the middle of your dog's leaving because he does not like Tom Cruise. He's like so pissed at how excited I am about Tom Cruise. I applaud mid movie, like after each action scene. I love action movies, but after he does like a crazy stunt or something, I will applaud and then I will yell at people around me for not applauding. And I'll be like, I'm sorry, can you do that?
Show him some fucking love, people. That's so funny.
He is so fun to watch. He looks great.
He's also the kind of person where I met him once.
Oh,
once
God.
At like a big Hollywood
party. And
he's
intense, right? Was he like, hi, Kara, tell me about your family, Kara? Like, was he just like...
He was very, like, we didn't really interact much. It was like, hi, nice to meet you, that's it.
Okay.
And then move on. But I did notice that, you know, when people talk about an X factor?
Yes, he has
He walks
it.
Into the room and, yeah. like people... Like the air, you know, he's just everybody. Oh, it's Tom Cruise. Oh my God.
That's what I've heard
and
about
him. And that's in a room full of celebrities, you know, and he's endlessly charming. It's like he does have like more thetans. What are they called?
Yeah, exactly.
Like he actually got to that level of Scientology and they gave him like gifts. They gave him like powers.
I don't know. I'm also obsessed with, I've been watching Leah Remini's
It's so good.
Scientology in the Aftermath. I'm obsessed with cults and it's fascinating to
it's
me.
It's so good.
But they talk about him in it. But
and he's very crazy.
He's crazy, but he is fucking so talented.
He's
and
very
that
talented.
Other guy in the movie, I don't, I'm an actor, but I don't remember actors' names.
That's why. In Mission Impossible?
In Mission Impossible. He was like Superman. He played Superman in a bunch of stuff. He's very handsome and tall.
Okay.
Listen, dude, you're very handsome and very tall. You look so bad next to Tom Cruise. Stop talking. Tom Cruise will just deliver this line and it'll be like funny and awesome. And then this guy's just like, I'm handsome and tall. And I'm just like, oh, please stop.
Did you see Night and Day?
No, I didn't see that
guy. I loved that movie because it was an action movie that took the piss out of action movies. It was Tom Cruise
that's fun.
Being very aware of Tom Cruise in every movie. And it was so good.
Mission Impossible leans into the camp.
Yeah, I figured it did. I figured they got kind of like hip to that. Yeah. And Night and Day is fully campy. It's him Cameron Diaz.
Oh, I'll watch
it. It's so good. So maybe, but I don't know if I should stand by the Tom Cruise example or if maybe I should pick somebody else because I still don't think he transforms himself.
Agreed.
He plays himself, which is fine.
An elevated version.
Of course.
Because he's not really a spy.
But he's not, you know, but he's not like Charlize Theron.
Correct.
Where when you watch her, you're like, holy shit, she's
And those
else.
Are the people I respect so much. Like, there are certain actors like Christian Bale and Charlize Theron that I am just in awe of because I'm like, oh, I could never do that. That's a skill I don't have.
But the thing is, I think that character actors are often the non-lead version of that.
Yeah.
Character actors almost are, I shouldn't say almost never, because almost every character actor has had, they've done an indie film or maybe they got a film and they got a lead role and that's amazing. But you're right, often they're series regulars, often they're people who come in and they transform themselves and they play a different character. Like, I think that your character on Parks and Rec is not you.
It's not me, but it has facets of me. Also, I come out of sketch comedy. So I'm used to playing like big, weird characters that I do absorb myself in.
Yeah.
And that I do lose myself in, rather. And I love that. I love doing that. But I'm never, and no disrespect to these people who do that, I just come out of comedy. So these actors who like will go into like, you know, several month long rehearsals for a movie role and like really, you know, study it and become that character. Yeah. Like that's just not how... It's not how I work, but it's also not the jobs I'm taking.
But do you think that if you landed a job like that, which you're not even auditioning for, but if you did, do you think you would do it?
Yeah, I would be excited to do that. Yeah. Yeah, I think I really would have fun with it at this point in my career.
But you like comedic roles.
Yeah, I like the comedy stuff.
And that's so fun. On Parks and Rec, did you guys ever get to improv?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, awesome. We would always do a few takes as written, and then we would do a fun run, especially any scenes with Amy. So I met Amy before Parks and Rec at Upright Citizens Brigade, which is her theater that she started with three other comedians.
She started Upright Citizens?
Yeah.
How did I not know this?
It's her, Matt Walsh, Matt Besser, and Ian Roberts.
The one on Franklin?
Yeah, they started in New York. Well, they actually started in Chicago, but they started UCB in New York. They all trained in Chicago, and then they moved to New York. They opened UCB in New York, which now has two locations there, and then they opened one out here, and now there's two locations here. So yeah, she's one of the original members and I had taken classes there. So I knew her through that world.
Cool.
It's now that world is very big, but at the time it was much smaller.
Yeah.
So I still auditioned for Parks and stuff, but I was definitely like in because knew her, which was great. She is an amazing, talented
improviser.
I'm so happy
to see that she and Nick Offerman like have a new show together.
I know.
Yeah. Is it on yet?
It's on. Yeah. I think it's the first season's ending soon.
But okay.
Yeah, it's like so a reality show where they like make people stuff.
I love that.
They're amazing.
That's so great. And so for people who are listening who maybe haven't seen Parks and Rec, or you're sitting here listening to Allison's voice and being like, who was she on Parks and Rec?
Oh yeah, I played the reporter, the newspaper reporter, Shauna Mulway Tweep. And I was always unlucky in love.
And didn't Amy's character, like, you guys kind of didn't really get along, did you?
No, not in the beginning, because the first episode that I'm in, which is like episode 2 or 3, I sleep with someone she has a crush on.
Oh my God. Yeah, I forgot that character.
Brandanowitz, who was only in the first season.
Yeah.
But then she kind of uses me to, and then she's always worried that I'm going to like, you know, write something bad about her, even though it's very low stakes.
She's always writing your headlines. Yeah, because you're like a local reporter.
Exactly.
And she's always writing your headlines for you.
Exactly. And she's always pitching me headlines. So a lot of those were improvised. She'd be like, let's do a fun run and just improvise them.
And you kind of sleep with a lot of guys on the show, don't
I do.
You?
Yeah. In a very just like desperate way. I'm always very unlucky in love. So this is really fun. The series finale, the whole shebang at the end, my character gets a couple of scenes where you find out what happens to her, and all the main characters get them, obviously. And then there's a few guest stars that get them, myself included. And then John Glazer's character, who he played Jam, Councilman Jam.
Love.
You find out what happens to him, but those, because we weren't the main characters, there wasn't enough room for us in the series finale to air it, but it's in the producer's cut. And it is so fun. So if you are a fan of the show, please watch the producer's cut series finale, because the character that I get to marry, I don't want to say who it is, but I was so excited when I got the, because I used to get the scripts like a few days before I started shooting, but for the series finale, it was very much under wraps. So I only got like my pages. And I remember I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And my boyfriend at the time was like, what? And I was like, oh my God, I get to kiss. And he was like, you're really excited about this. And I was like, I know. I won't say who it is, but it was really exciting.
Amazing. Well, if there's no way it was Chris Pratt.
It was not Chris Pratt.
Okay. Did you ever kiss Chris Pratt?
No, I never, no.
Did you ever date him?
Oh, in real life. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, like every night after the show. You know what's super weird is I was having brunch with Ali Ward and Ben Acker.
I love them.
I love them too. And Ali's been on the show before, so you'll recognize her name. Ben, I'm not sure if I've had on the show. I need to bring him on the show. But as we were eating at Stamp, which is like a restaurant in my neighborhood.
Yeah, I know
Stamp. Yeah, everybody eats there. And the guy, I don't know his name, but the guy who played, what was his, John Franco? What was his name? Dang it.
Wait, who are you talking about?
The guy from Parks and Rec who was like, what's his name's best friend who had the sister?
Oh, Ben Schwartz. Ben Schwartz is his real name. Yeah.
So Ben Schwartz came in.
Yeah. Oh, his character. Why am I blanking his name? John Raffio.
John Raffio, not John Franco. John Raffio. And I was like, that's so weird because I'm hanging out with Allison later today.
I know Ben and I know each other from New York from years,
awesome.
From years ago. Yeah.
So
he's
funny.
Killing it.
Yeah. He's great. And then
he's so funny.
Kumail. What's his last name?
Kumail Nanjiani.
Nanjiani.
I hope I said
right.
That correctly.
And his wife walked by.
Emily,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was like, what is my neighborhood?
They wrote The Big Sick together. It's based on their true story, which is insane.
Yeah, I feel like I intimately know them, even though I don't know them.
They're lovely.
Yeah.
There are good people in this industry.
There are. There so are. There's
just
a
not
lot.
A lot.
No, there
you
are.
You say
a
there's
lot.
A lot. I'm like, no, there's not.
No, there's a lot. There's a lot. There are some that are. But so I want to know more about acting, because it's something I do. It's funny because when people find out I do television,
they assume I'm an actor. Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never acted a day in my life. Like, I would have no idea how to.
But you've hosted, and I've done a lot of hosting too.
You have?
Yes.
That's cool. You've kind of crossed over in both worlds.
I was like a VJ for a while, if anybody remembers VJs.
On MTV?
On VH1.
No way.
And then on Fuse.
Oh, very cool.
Actually, I think Fuse was first. Yeah, Fuse and VH1.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so I would introduce music videos.
That's awesome. Are you a big music nerd?
It's funny. People would assume I was because I worked at a record label for a while and then I was a VJ at two networks. So people assumed I was like music person and I was always interviewing, musicians, but I don't play any instruments. I can't sing to save my life. I'm not a good dancer. And I kind of have like my bands that I've been listening to since I was young and still kind of stick with those. So I'm not really like a music nerd.
I'm the same way.
Right?
Oh my gosh. I listen to the same shit I listened to in high school.
Yeah. And people are like, it's not that I don't like new music. Like I'll check it out and stuff. And I like when I work out, I like to listen to pop music.
That's fair. I listen to rap when I work out.
I listen to rap sometimes too, but like I'll also put on just like Work Bitch by Britney, you know, Apple Music Radio. And I'm like, let's go.
You know what my favorite Pandora station is?
What?
The Africa by Toto station.
Great. Respect. Yeah. And I'm like, I know what I like and exactly. I'm okay with it. But people are always like, Allison, what are the new bands? I'm like, why are you asking me?
Oh my gosh. I was watching something last night. Like, I'm really obsessed with HGTV. Ugh. It's like the only thing that ever
plays.
I'm like,
officially a grown up.
I'm so weird. But we were also, we're really into Last Chance U on Netflix. So if you've never seen it, I highly recommend it.
I don't know this. Wait, I have questions, but which HGTV shows are you watching?
All of them.
Do you ever watch, because I haven't watched it in a couple of years, but I used to be obsessed with it. So obviously Hunters.
House Hunters is my least favorite.
Okay.
No, I love Flip or Flop.
What about
Property
Income
Brothers.
Property?
Income Property is good.
Because
it's not really on that much anymore.
Okay.
I know who you're talking about, the guy.
Yeah, I don't want to objectify him, but he is very sexy.
He is very attractive. He's very attractive. I'm with you. And that's a good show. That's a really good show.
It's a great show.
They air it more on DIY Network than HGTV.
Yeah, okay. So your Property Brothers. Did you know the Property Brothers? I'm a little worried about them. I'm a little worried about the Property Brothers.
One of them got married and seems really happy.
He's married and they still live together. The brothers still live together.
Oh, that's weird.
And the wife lives there. I think they might both be in relationships and both of the women live with... That's weird,
that's
right?
That's super weird.
I read that somewhere. I don't know if it's true, but if it is, if that is true, then I want to say to you guys, like, it's time to like get your own place.
No, completely.
Even if it's like a multi-million dollar home, it's time to get your own place.
Oh, they're very rich.
Like,
I don't think they need to be roommates.
Like, come on, guys.
They're doing great. They have like 10 TV shows.
And what woman is like, yeah, this is okay?
Especially because they're like twins. So
it's
two of your significant other.
Weird.
That's very weird. Yeah.
Did you know the first, sorry.
No.
Did you know the first Siamese twins?
Uh-huh.
were from Siam. That's why they
make sense.
Were dubbed the Siamese twins, but they spent their adult life in North Carolina. They were connected via a liver duct.
Okay.
That they found out after they died could have easily been snipped and would not have harmed either of them.
Were they sideshowed?
Of course. At the time. It was very unfortunate. They lived. Now, this is Property Brothers. This is when you have to do this. Okay. You guys don't have to do this, but they both were married. They both fathered many children and they would spend 2 weeks with one in one wife's house and then two weeks in the other wife's house.
So they were almost like polygamists.
Yes. Well, except I don't know.
Not because,
because but like, you can't help about think about intercourse and be like, intercourse, like, what am I? Sex guys.
You're an adult too. Did they wear like earplugs and blindfolds or were they like,
I'll like, you know, do some light fondling. I don't know, but you can't help but think about
it. Brother.
Right?
Your twin brother. Yeah, that's weird.
Can't help but think about it.
It just takes me to Big Love. Did you watch Big Love?
I didn't watch Big Love either. I didn't watch any of like the main.
Big Love was so good. You know, I was raised Mormon. Loved it. So
that's right. I didn't know that.
It resonated with me a little bit. It's really good. You should try. If you're ever, you know, there's a lot of those shows where you want a new show, you haven't found a new show, and then you're like,
and you
there's
go
so
back.
Many classic things.
I feel like I need to, I never watched The Wire, and I feel like
The Wire's the best show on television.
People are like, you should watch it. But then some people are like, no, it's been a while. It won't be as groundbreaking as it was when it came out.
No, it's still, it's amazing.
Okay.
Wire is by far, holds up, best show on TV.
But
when ever.
I'll get really sad.
You might get sad, but also the thing about The Wire is it takes at least 3 to 4 episodes to get into it.
I've heard that too.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, they watch one episode and they're like, don't really like it. And I'm like, no,
that's
you gotta stick with it. There's so many fucking characters and it's really hard to keep them all straight.
Okay.
But it's really, I would say top 3 shows that have ever been on television scripted are The Wire.
Uh-huh.
No, top 4.
Okay.
Top 5.
Okay.
Band of Brothers, which is technically a miniseries.
Yes.
So good. West Wing.
Okay.
I'd put that up there.
I didn't watch any of these. Keep going.
Oh my gosh. Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Okay. Breaking Bad. I'd put Breaking Bad in my top 10.
I don't know what number five is.
You want to know my all-time number one, I think, is the best written show on television?
Yes.
And no one's ever heard of it or seen it.
What?
My boyfriend introduced it to me. It's called Patriot. It's on Amazon.
I've never seen it.
And it is the best show I've ever seen.
Well, I'm going to watch it now.
Please watch this show. They shot one season and it's 3 years later and they're now shooting a second season. No one has watched it. It is an absurdist, dark comedy slash drama about a guy who's a spy. So evidently this is real practice. If you are a spy and you need to travel to another country, you can't travel under the government because they're going to know that you're a spy. Like the other country is going to be like, oh, you're traveling with the government. You're obviously a spy.
Yeah. You can't have like special State Department.
Right.
Like,
exactly. Status. So what's a lot of spies do is that, and there's a specific department for it, but I don't know what it's called, but they will get civilian jobs and that allow them to travel and then travel through the jobs.
Like True Lies.
But they actually have to do the job. And they actually have to, like, the job doesn't know that they're a spy.
So they're basically two full-time
exactly.
workers.
Exactly. So this is about a guy who's like amazing. Selling piping in the Midwest, but is also like a high-level spy. And has to keep going overseas. And it's so well acted. It has some of the best monologues I've ever seen in a television or theater for that matter. It's just
amazing.
Fascinating.
And is it funny at all?
It's funny in a weird, dark way. It's very dark.
But it's not meant to be a comedy. It's like a pseudo everything.
It's meant to be. It's an hour or so, which in our world it's means drama. It's a drama. Yeah. But it has funny parts.
Oh my gosh. Do you know what that reminds me of a little bit, except that it's a comedy and it's a 30 minute, but I'm obsessed with it? Barry.
Oh, I've heard Barry's great. I haven't watched it.
Phenomenal.
And I'll tell you the real reason I resisted Barry. And I will watch it. And
it's
the reason,
very meta because it's all about acting.
Well, exactly. The other reason why I almost didn't watch Patriot is because I was like, the three leads in this are straight white dudes and I'm sick of this. I'm not going to support this anymore. I'm done.
The second lead of Barry is a woman.
Okay,
but she's
good.
Also white.
But then I was like, God damn it. That show Patriot's so good. It's so good. God damn you.
Barry is one of those shows where it's a comedy. It's a dark comedy.
Yeah.
And it's what it's meant to be. And you're watching it and it's
and
funny.
I like and Bill
kind
Hader.
Of, yeah, and Bill Hader's amazing. And it's kind of silly and it's kind of absurdist and it's kind of stupid. And then there are episodes with scenes where it's like arresting. It's like some of the best acting you've ever seen.
That's what I've heard.
And you're like, what the fuck? In the middle of this like wackadoodle comedy with all these like ridiculous characters.
You get some real moments.
Oh my God.
It's same incredible. With Grace and Frankie. Do you watch that?
No, but I've heard a million great things about it.
I love it. I wasn't sure about it at first because it is a comedy and it's not always like laugh out loud funny, but there are parts that are laugh out loud funny. And it is like no other comedy I've ever seen. First of all, it stars two women over 70.
Which is amazing.
Which is amazing. Yeah. And they're not caricatures of themselves. They're like real women with like who are like sad and happy and sexual and vulnerable and amazing. And they're also like, I'll cry. Like I'll watch the show and there'll be moments where I will cry.
Aww.
And they're just, it's so well done. I will say that Jane Fonda is amazing, but there are definitely parts where I'm like, she doesn't understand the joke that she's saying. She's just saying it because someone told her to say it.
Isn't that funny when that happens?
Yeah, and you can see it.
I hate to name drop, but I'm going to. But one time I was at a party. Those who are listening, if you've ever Googled me, you know that I used to date somebody who was very famous. And so I went to a lot of weird parties and I was like totally fish out of water and was wearing ripped jeans and a tank top and sneakers when everybody else was wearing gowns and it was very uncomfortable. But one time I was at a party and Dustin Hoffman was there.
Amazing.
And for whatever reason, he was standing right next to Rosario Dawson. Mm-hmm. And I was like, the two of you were in my two favorite movies of all time, my favorite drama and my favorite comedy. And they were like, no way, which one? And to Rosario, I was like, A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints is the best drama I've ever seen. And she was like, oh my God, I love that movie. It was so whatever. Like, nobody's ever heard of it. Nobody's ever seen it. And it was like very indie, but she was incredible in it. And it was great. And then I turned to Dustin and I was like, I love I Heart Huckabees. Like, it's my favorite comedy of all time. Yeah. I think it's so funny. And he goes, I didn't understand that movie at all. Like, just a deadpan. Like, I don't think he was trying to be funny.
No.
He was literally like, yeah. I didn't get
and
that
And no
movie.
Disrespect. It's just like a different kind of humor.
Yeah.
And sometimes you see it.
And I was so depressed.
I know.
I was like, fuck.
Well, they say never meet your heroes. Because it really is just like, it can be crushing when you're like, that was a brilliant piece of work. And it's like, I just had the lines.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing about acting. I mean, it kind of brings back to what we were saying earlier, that sometimes it is just like saying the lines, or sometimes it's like a good director or a good editor editing around someone. And sometimes it is the performance.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's amazing how far people can get in this industry not having talent.
Oh, no. There are a ton of people who not
to say that Dustin Hoffman doesn't have talent.
No. He's amazing. Yeah, of course. He's fucking
amazing.
Rain Man.
But there's like,
but there are people who just play themselves, which is fine because that is a way to act.
Yeah.
It's not that you're always supposed to
like
find
Robert
something
De Niro
in yourself.
Can only play himself.
Yeah. But he was incredible in Awakenings.
I didn't see Awakenings.
He played a guy with
I did see Awakenings.
Crazy brain.
Yes.
Yeah,
I like remember that.
Yeah. He was very, that was probably peak career. Like, that was very different for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, that's true. But most of his other stuff is just like,
but
I'm
going
to be an asshole. Talk like
yeah.
this.
And his other stuff is the stuff he gets all the cred for. Like,
yeah.
Nobody fucking saw Awakenings. But he was incredible in it. You know what I mean?
I forgot about that movie. Yeah,
exactly. He was incredible in it. But also, he's playing opposite Robin Williams, who is also incredible. You know, it's like they fed off of each other. But you're right. There's a lot of people, or just like regular actors on TV shows.
Yeah.
You know, they play themselves, whatever. They're good at what they do.
Yeah.
Also, how much of this is really just people want to be like, I've found working in LA or across the world, actually, working in production jobs, you know, in this industry. I had air quotes though, because I hate saying that. But I have found that a lot of people get hired, I think myself included in certain respects, because we're easy to work with.
Oh, yeah.
So
my
much
friend,
of it is
I almost wish it were that more though.
Yeah.
My friend has this idea, which I totally support, that every performer should have a report card.
Yes.
And that leaves their job. And then it's like, they showed up on time. They knew their lines. They were good to work with. They were funny, you know, whatever. Because
they were divas.
Exactly.
They were not divas.
Because a lot of times I'll be on jobs and I'm just shocked with how much working actors, and again, not all of them, not all of us, but how entitled they are.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's almost not their fault because it's almost not. Because if you get to a certain point, people are doing things for you. Like, as an example, when you're on set, if you need a water, if you were at a party, the polite thing to do would be to get the water yourself and to offer water for everyone else. But sometimes you need to stand there because they're getting your light or because you're about to go on and you have to ask someone to bring you a water.
Yeah. And it gets to the point where if you started to wander off, they would yell at you.
Exactly. That's
like,
what I'm saying.
There are people here to do that for you.
The unprofessional thing would be to leave and get a water.
Yeah.
The professional thing to do would be to stand where you're supposed to stand and ask for someone to bring you a water. But that can start to fuck with your head with if you have a weak constitution, because some people will be like, oh, you're bringing me things. Another example is when you're out, if you're shooting outside and it's sunny out, someone, and you're, you know, going over your line, someone might come and hold an umbrella over you to shade you from the sun.
One time on a show.
And it's like, weird when it happens. You're like, I can hold the umbrella. And they're like, no, you're busy.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't need an umbrella. And they're like, yes, you do. You can't get any sweat on your face.
Exactly. And it's not about you. It's about the hair and makeup stylist. Yeah. And you don't want to mess up their work. But again, a weak-minded person would just see that as, oh, things are being bought for me. Things are being held above me. So there's also a lot of union rules where it's like, I need that chair moved. And you're like, I got it. I can move the chair. But that's like a big no-no. It's like, no, there's somebody's job. And if that chair were to fall, you could get sued and blah, blah, blah. So these people who work, especially from a young age for many years, start to act like they're entitled to things. Mm-hmm. And it is shocking when I walk on a set. And maybe this is just me not working as much as them. Maybe it's me being a better person or a smarter person. I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that I did a lot of comedy and theater, which was very low budget early on.
Collaborative.
Exactly. Yeah. So I did have to wear a lot of hats and move chairs and stuff like that. But I just see, I just want to slap some of them. I never would, but I just really want to. They're just brats.
Because they don't separate the position that they're in, that's part of the job, from who they are as a person. They think, as a person, I deserve this stuff.
Exactly.
When really it's, no, these are the roles of the job. That's why I always appreciated that, you know, I've worked a lot with Bill Nye over the years. Mm-hmm. I was on his most recent Netflix show, and he does a lot with my other podcast, Skeptic's Guide. And he calls himself, when he's in a job, and I mean, he's usually the host and the EP of his show, but he calls himself the on-camera department because he's like, we all have a job to do.
Yeah.
You know, and
I hate when people say talent.
Yeah. So he's like, on-camera department, these are my, these are the things I have to do to bring what I bring to the table, the same way that this, you know, art department does it, the same way that the grips and the gaffers do it. And I always liked that because it brings you back to being part of the team, that's why I like doing field work. Mm-hmm. You know, I do a lot of stuff in the field where it's like,
oh yeah, you got to do everything.
Cam. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, you're just together and you're with your people and it's like, you can't not be in the shit. But I think there's little things that people can do. And again, I've dated people who were high up in different industries and I've seen differences in how they manage their success.
Right.
One of the things that I noticed that I think is like such an easy thing to do is like learn the names of the people
you're working with. Oh my God. Yeah.
Like if there's a PA whose job it is to bring you water, they're assigned to you, or even if they're not, but their job it is to know your PA's name.
I agree.
So that you can be like, hey, Sally, do you mind grabbing me a water? This one's almost finished. Instead of just like, I need a water.
Exactly.
Come on, guys. You know, it's like this, like little things, and like always thank them. And also I feel like treat everybody with so much respect, not just because that's what you do as a human being who's empathetic, but also because that person might be your fucking director.
Exactly. And probably will be.
Probably will be.
But you're saying this as an intelligent, empathetic, kind human. And like, there's so many people who don't realize this. And what's frustrating to me is that they're getting far acting like that.
I know. It's this bimodal thing where the most extreme examples actually have more success.
Yeah, it is. Ugh. But I do think that, I mean, the Me Too movement has been great for so many reasons. But this unexpected residual movement of that I'm seeing is just assholes in general. Mm-hmm. Male or female, non-sexual, non-sexual harassment incidents of just people being assholes, where I love how the Me Too movement is having people stand up and be like, I won't stand for this, for you sexually harassing and sexually assaulting people anymore. But there's this other movement I feel like that's starting to pop up that people are just saying, I won't stand for you being an asshole.
Totally.
Like, you can't treat me like that anymore.
And so, and a lot of times that is still gendered. Even it's kind of like,
oh
my
yeah,
example
of course.
From,
yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I can't do or say this because as a woman, my words don't have as much weight. Like,
but there was an incident. Exactly. Absolutely. But a lot of it is just like there was that kid who was fired. Kid, I don't know. He's in his 20s. He was fired recently from Lethal Weapon because he was just an asshole on set.
Good.
And he was like, but I'm the star. I'm the star of a network show.
And they're like, we don't care.
You're an asshole. No one wants to work with you. And they fired him.
Totally.
Which is amazing.
That is amazing.
Because that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. And I think a big reason of that is the Me Too movement.
Because I think that a lot of these people too have to realize that like, when you're in a certain position of, you know, you get a lot of good things out of it, sure. Like when you're in a position where you make a lot of money, where it's your name on the marquee, whatever the case may be. But that also means that there are hundreds, sometimes thousands of people relying on you being a professional to get their paycheck.
Exactly.
And that's what we saw when the Roseanne thing happened, that all these other people got fucked over, or the Cosby show. When all this stuff happened to Bill Cosby, people stopped syndicating his show. So all of the actors on that show started losing out on
their
income.
Which is such a bummer.
I know. And now we saw, did you see that whole thing that was trending?
Oh, yeah.
What was his name? I need to Google his name. The actor who played Elvin on Bill Cosby.
Yeah, that someone saw him working at a Trader Joe's, which is fine.
Totally normal.
Because that's what people do in this industry when you're artists and you don't.
Jeffrey Owens.
Yes, Jeffrey Owens.
Yeah, some lady took a picture of him bagging groceries at a Trader Joe's, sold it to TMZ or somewhere else. And there was all these people like, oh, look how far he's fallen. Which is like, if you look at his IMDb, like he has credits from this year. Like
exactly.
He's still acting.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, like, what I love to see, and this I do think is tied into Me Too, is how many people stood up, like Judd Apatow, like big people who probably never even met the guy, were like, oh, yeah, we're going to shit on a guy for making a living.
Yeah, exactly.
For like earning an honest living.
I was furious when I saw that. And the fact that they were shaming him for like having a dirty uniform, I'm like, he's working. Of course it's dirty.
In a grocery store. Store, like around food.
Yeah. He would be a bad worker if it was clean. Like, what are you thinking?
It's because it's like, you know how in TV, nobody ever brushes their teeth with toothpaste. They never close the door behind them and there's no trash cans.
Yeah.
Like, they think that that's the life of an actor, that they're not real people. They're characters walking around.
And people have to understand, too, that I was actually just interviewed by a magazine about this, about the whole new climate of the industry that... Mm-hmm. With Netflix and streaming and things like that, a lot of this is still categorized as new media.
Yeah, so it's not union.
So it is union, but it's categorized as new media. So even though they'll sometimes pay the day rate of what a TV show would be, the residuals are far less.
Or if you even get residuals.
Exactly.
Yeah, and like there's weird... That's true. Actually, I get union on my Netflix shows more than sometimes on... I'm almost never union on my cable shows.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A huge bummer.
And
it's like only network and Netflix.
But Netflix is really shady, and I have worked for them, but I will be vocal about this. Mm-hmm. They're really shady about their numbers. They don't release their numbers.
Change. Oh, you're right. Yeah,
and
everybody knows that.
The reason they don't have to is because they don't have advertisers. So like a network like Fox and CBS and NBC, they have advertisers, and their advertisers want to know how many eyes are going to be on this ad, blah, blah, blah. So
that's how they set their prices. Yeah.
Right, but since Netflix is subscription-based, they don't have to release their numbers, but then the creators and the actors in the shows suffer because we don't know if we're getting fair residuals.
And you don't...
Spoiler alert, we're not.
Yeah, and you don't know if people are watching your shows.
Exactly.
You either have to hear it from word of mouth, or I think once in a while Netflix does like a ranking.
Right.
Like they'll say like our top 20 documentaries.
But you still don't know how many that is.
No. Yeah, it could be overrepresented or underrepresented.
Yeah, so a lot of that... what I don't think they're realizing is they're hurting actors and... A lot of my friends are taking other jobs. A lot of my successful friends are going back to waiting tables.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that people look at work as if it is on some sort of like spectrum of, I don't know, respect or pride. Mm-hmm. And even within the acting world, like you do a lot of commercial work.
Oh, yeah. That's how I pay most of my bills.
Yeah, I see you all the time on commercials. And you did the great commercial that many people have done with the amazing girl with the red hair who's diarrhea girl.
The diarrhea one?
Yeah.
Oh, Alana Becker. She just got married this weekend.
She's awesome.
She's
and
great.
Now I'm seeing that she's doing a lot more commercial work. Like she's in real estate commercial and stuff like that.
Because they still pay better.
Yeah, yeah. And so the thing is like... You probably have gotten shit from people who are like, oh, you did a diarrhea.
Oh, you
commercial.
Have no idea. Also, like...
And you didn't even have the diarrhea. She had the diarrhea.
She was the diarrhea.
She was your diarrhea.
I had diarrhea.
But then you were mostly like, I'm a hip business lady taking on corporate meetings.
That diarrhea commercial, I don't care. Like, and that's the thing that I like, probably wouldn't have done, like, 20 years ago. I would be like, I'm not going to be in a diarrhea. Now I'm like, diarrhea commercial? That, oh my gosh, pharmaceutical money? Yeah, please.
Well,
give me that money.
You're a fucking comic actor.
Exactly.
Like, you're great in this commercial. And it's a funny commercial.
It was a funny commercial. Yeah. Alana is hilarious in it.
She's so good.
And yeah, I did, pun intended, get shit for doing that commercial. Also, like, obviously, everyone comes out of the woodwork, like friends from high school are like, I saw you in the shit commercial. And it's like, did you see Parks and Rec? No, but I saw you in the shit commercial.
Yeah, because they can't help it.
Damn it. Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, yeah, well, I built a kitchen from my shit commercial.
Exactly.
Because those are good residuals, right?
Yeah, those. I mean, they're not as good as they used to be because, again, now it's not only airing on networks. Like, if you talk to actors who are like over 70, they'll tell you about times in the 80s when they like booked one commercial and then sent all of their kids to college on that one commercial.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so like There was just fewer. Bless you.
Wow. I'm going to leave that in.
Please do. It was great.
I sneezed into my shirt.
It was great. But yeah, there were fewer places to air them. So the one, and there were just fewer networks, and the people just made a shit ton of money off.
And now it's things like, I mean, people like myself will get branded opportunities.
Exactly.
Through, you know, because I do hosting mostly. I hate the word hosting the same way that we hate talent. So. Presenting.
That's what they call the British.
Yeah, that's what they call it in England. I think it's better. So I will do a lot of presenting work or correspondent work. Mm-hmm. And so, and because I have a bit of a social media following, I'll get offers to do branded work.
Exactly.
I need, you know, it's how I pay the bills.
Right.
And so, but that is competing in a way.
Absolutely.
You know, because that's social media. It's commercial work. And luckily, I have a great agent and we're able to negotiate and say, this is commercial. Like, you're not going to pay me like a day rate for something where I'm putting my name connecting to a brand. Like, that's a very different thing. But it's hard. Like, nobody's making as much money as they used to.
Oh, no.
Except the upper.
Except the top tier. Yeah. And these new tax laws have really fucked people over because, I mean, for many reasons. Mm-hmm. But what Congress thought they were doing, which I almost see their point, but what they thought they were doing was making actors, big movie stars who make a shit ton of money, pay more taxes. And I was like, okay, I'm all for the super wealthy paying more taxes. But what they did was eliminate me as an individual who's a middle class working actor to I'm no longer able to, as an individual, deduct my expenses.
Were you not, you don't have a corporation?
I'm not incorporated.
Ooh, yeah.
Because it's expensive to be incorporated.
But you have to do it.
Right.
But up
until a couple of years ago, it wasn't really, it didn't behoove you to pay the incorporation rates unless you were making like over $200,000 a year consistently, which I am not. So they now, because of that, actors like myself are going to lose out on so much money. We're going to pay something like an average of like $5,000 in taxes more a year because of this tax law. And it just shows you how out of touch Congress is. And they really don't understand what's going on.
And they're really forcing you to form an S corp,
exactly.
Which is actually a loophole. It's not what S corps are supposed
to be used for. Exactly. It is a loophole.
But that's what I do.
Yeah.
And that's what almost everybody I know does, because it's the only way to protect yourself, even from historically when you are a sole proprietor. So you're a freelancer, which means you're 1099 across the board.
Exactly.
You're never getting W-2s, which means you have to pay your own taxes and you are the employee and the employer.
Exactly.
So you're paying double payroll taxes on everything you do anyway, which is partially why I became an S corp, because then I'm still paying payroll and I'm paying employer taxes on my S corp money, employee taxes on my personal paychecks, but you're able to use a corporate tax rate for the vast majority of your income, which is lower.
Yeah.
But I mean, it sucks. It's a system that I disagree with, but it's like the only way for me to be able to not give the government, 40% of my income? Instead, I give them 32%.
Yeah, but it really, like, it's just another way that, like, people are getting screwed over in this new.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, it should be based on income.
Yeah.
Not based on what you do for a living.
Hello. Come on, guys.
You know, we also can't deduct any of our clothing.
Yeah.
We buy so much clothing.
For work.
For work. But unless it's a uniform, like if we have to buy scrubs or, like, a mechanic shirt.
Exactly.
We're not allowed to deduct it.
Which is preposterous.
Yeah. There's
because
a lot of
there's
weird
things
rules.
That I only wear for auditions or for jobs or for sketch comedy that I'm not going to wear in my everyday life, like an alien costume.
Yeah, or like when I'm out in the field doing a Nat Geo show wearing, you know, my like khaki button-down shirt. Like, I don't.
You're not going to wear that again?
Yeah, this is my camel riding shirt. I wear it all the time to brunch.
Oh,
yeah, it's very strange. It's such a strange industry. I want to ask you, I mean, we're talking for too long. Do you have to be somewhere?
No, I'm
okay. Good.
Me? No, I'm a working actor. I don't have to be anywhere.
I want to ask you, like, what kinds of jobs are your favorite kinds of jobs? Looking back on the things that you've done and the things that you plan to do, like, what are the kinds of things, if you could snap your fingers and work every day? Well, you probably wouldn't want to work every day, but what would be, like, your dream? What are some of the things that you've loved doing? And then what are some of the things that are, like, I don't know, like, you do it for the money?
Well, it's interesting because it's changed over time. Like, I used to not like hosting, but now I like it a lot more. And I think that's just because I found my own voice. I think when I was younger in doing it, I wasn't able to be myself. And a lot of the jobs I was hired for, they're like, we want you to be you and like sarcastic and stuff. And then I would get there and they'd be like, well, that's too like, yeah, that's too dry. And we want you to be like bubbly. And I'm like, I'm not really, that's not really me.
And so then you're just acting as a host.
Exactly. Yeah. I love doing anything sketch comedy. I love doing anything where I don't have to look cute. I love being like, I think a lot of actors, a lot of women actors, like being all glammed up and stuff. And it's not that I don't like that. It's fun and it can be fun, but they are afraid to look ugly on camera. And yeah. I love looking ugly on camera. I love it. I love just being like, not just looking like a crazy person and getting to be a character and
like full Amy Sedaris.
Yeah. I just think that's so fun to do and it's very freeing. Mm-hmm. And it must be what it's like to just be a guy. Not that men are ugly, but that men aren't always constantly worried about what they're looking like. Whereas I'm like, is my hair in place? And like, and I love it. Just is very freeing.
You know, that's why I don't like, because you're right. Whenever, even as a host, I get to play myself on TV, mm-hmm. but I still am expected to like wear makeup.
Right.
I
mean, exactly.
Partly that's part of why I love being in the field, because nobody gives a shit if you're minimal
right,
makeup.
Right.
Cause you're not supposed, like you're in Africa.
Exactly.
Like,
you're not supposed to have a fake eyelash.
Yeah. But that's A, why I love podcasting, because nobody can see us. Mm-hmm. And B, why, if you've noticed...
We're both in the bubble bath right now.
Yeah, it's super weird, but amazing. But that's also why I don't wear makeup in my daily life. It's because it's...
Because it's too much.
It's too much. The amount of time and effort it takes in my job mm-hmm. just to have some sheen of something that I don't even really fully comprehend. In my daily life, I'm like, whatever, just take it.
Yeah.
Just take it as it is.
Yeah, here
it is. I can't be bothered.
Love it or leave it. Here it is.
That's another show on... Oh, Love It or List It.
Oh, Love It or List It. That was it. You're right. Damn it. Damn I messed it.
That's
up.
That's awesome.
HGTV show. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So those are the characters I like playing.
Oh, fun.
I also love when I get to improvise. Mm-hmm. And work with other comedians.
So you like ensemble kind of stuff? Or...
Yes, definitely.
Cool.
And like I said, now I'm a little more interested in hosting than I have been for the past few years, and kind of pulling away from acting a little and writing a lot more.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I have 3 movies in development now. I write with partners. I write with Kimmy Gatewood, who is an amazing director, and she's also one of the wrestlers on the show Glow.
Oh my gosh, my very good friend. Actually, my boyfriend's best friend is one of the writers on Glow.
Oh, really? That's
so
fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sasha Rothschild.
I think I've met her.
Red hair.
I think I have met her, but possibly not. I'm not buddies with her, but
she's awesome.
Yeah, that show's so fun.
So wait, which character?
She's one of the Beatdown Biddies. She's the blonde one. In the first season, they played like old ladies together in the ring.
Oh, yes, yes.
So she does like wrestling training and stuff, which is so fun.
That's awesome.
But she and I wrote 2 movies together that we're now developing and with production companies, which is great. And then my other friend, Aaron Gibson, who has a new book out called Feminasty.
Actually, I feel like I've seen that.
It's out today.
That's awesome.
She is incredible, and she and I are writing a movie together. So I want to shout out to their amazing work as well.
So cool.
But yeah, I've been shifting just to writing a lot more because I feel like I have a lot more control over it. And with acting, it's just a lot of like waiting for auditions. Where if I have downtime, I can just write, which is incredible.
You should start a podcast.
You're the second person to tell me that today.
Yeah, I think you should. Like, the thing about podcasting is great because you can make money on it. You don't have to, but you can.
Yeah.
You have total control, like ultimate control. You can decide how often you want to do it.
Yeah.
And maybe you can do it with your writing partners.
Yeah, I've thought about it.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's
guys,
oh my gosh.
Tell me what I should do a podcast about.
Seriously, it's so fun. And yeah. Hit her up. Hit her up on the soch meads.
Get on the soch meads, guys. Tell me what I should do a pod about.
How should we cast? I don't know. Okay, so that's awesome. What about when you do commercial work? Do you enjoy it?
I can enjoy it. There are times when I enjoy it, depending on the directors. Because a lot of like really fun directors will do commercials.
Because they're short. They're like a compact job.
And well, no, because they pay a shit ton of money.
And they pay a shit ton of money. Oh, because there's a brand behind it?
Yeah. Yeah. But they are usually very uncreative in they're just not good for the creative process because they want to sell a brand. And a lot of times people from that brand will have opinions on the jokes. And that is just a comedy killer in the worst way. Or they'll just come up to you and stand 2 feet from you and say to someone like, I don't like her hair. I don't like the way she's saying this. And you're like, on commercial sets, you are very much an object to be moved around and told where to look and told how to stand. It has been changing a lot. For the better and for the worse, it's been changing for the better in that because they're now giving people more control because they're doing like viral campaigns and online stuff and social media stuff and, you know, these 30-second videos and So that's good, but because of that, they're paying a lot less.
Yeah, the truth of the matter is the more traditional ones are the ones that pay
exactly.
better.
Exactly. The more traditional ones where you are an object pay well. So do I enjoy doing them? I enjoy smiling for 6 hours and then getting $10,000.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't mind that.
Yeah, it's very
but
similar to
it's
my...
It's not like that anymore.
My girlfriends who are models.
Yeah, exactly.
They say it's like they're human hangers.
Exactly. It's just like stand there and like you're talked about. Yeah, like you're an object. And it's very off-putting and very weird. But you're just like, I signed up for this and I'm okay with it for a short amount of time. But yeah, then you'll do like... you know, a funnier die integrated marketing video that is technically for a brand like Dunkin' Donuts. And you get to have way more fun with it and do all sorts of crazy stuff, but you're going to walk away with a couple $100.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a big difference.
So,
in how
I mean,
pay.
Yeah. That's which true. One do you want to do? Like, I want to sit here and be like, you know, it's all about the art, but I have a mortgage.
Exactly. And so what about the audition process? Because
oh,
I hear a lot about, you know, I took one acting class once.
I'm sorry.
It was a few years ago, not even, maybe 2 years ago. A friend of mine and I were like, we want, you know, we do a lot of hosting work. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be a good idea. So we took an acting class at the community college.
Amazing. Yeah, oh my God. That's, like, I would love to be a fly on the wall.
It was so cheap. But the acting coach was really sweet. I have no idea if she has any cred whatsoever.
Amazing.
I think she was like back in the day. I mean, she was in her 70s, but yeah. She was beautiful. And like, I don't, she was lovely. But back in the day, she was like the Wonder Bread girl.
Oh my God, that's, she probably made a killing if she was the Wonder Bread
girl.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like she was kind of, you know, but she was very sweet and she like believed it. She still calls me to be like,
oh my
God, hope you're acting.
Her.
And I'm like, I'm not an actor. But I was asking her about the, because she was like, you should do commercials. Like it's a good way to make some money, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, but every time I talk to people who work in this industry, they say that it's like you audition like 100 times for one gig. And she was like, no, they don't have good agents. She was very like, you should be booking at least 10% of everything you go out for.
She's coming from a different time.
That's what I figured.
It is different now. There are also 60% of commercials are now non-union, which is horrifying.
That is
so there has been, especially in the past few years, a drastic drop in the number of opportunities. I still go out on commercial auditions, not as many national networks, which means they're airing on the national networks, like the big four networks.
Yeah.
A lot of them are like cable or internet only. You can still get a national network. Again, it's not going to pay as much as she made when, I mean, considering inflation, it's not going to pay as much as she made with the Wonder being the Wonder Bread girl. But
or like Flo, she probably does okay.
Yeah, Flo probably does okay. But Flo also will have a contract that she doesn't probably make residuals. She has like an overall deal.
Probably, yeah. But, and she does hundreds of episodes.
Yes,
I mean,
and she definitely like bought a couple houses off that money.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
Yeah, she's doing fine. But yeah, it's a different market now. And also I've noticed, so usually when I go to audition for a commercial, if you get a callback, you find out you get a callback. And I've been doing this for a while and I'm not bad at it. So I get a lot of callbacks. Mm-hmm. And I used to get, when you get the next step after a callback, sorry, I'm explaining to people who don't know the process.
No, I'm sure nobody knows the process.
The next step after a callback is getting put on hold or on avail, which used to mean that it was between you and maybe one or two other people. And they want to just make sure you're available for these dates because we might book this job for you. So your agent would say, congrats, you're put on, they want to check your avails or you're being put on hold.
Which means clear your schedule.
Exactly.
There's still a chance you're not going to book it. But
right. But your chances are pretty good.
Yeah.
And usually when you're put on hold for something, you'd get at least half of them because you're in the
50-50.
Top two or three.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what it is, but I've been put on hold in the past year maybe 8 times and have booked none of them.
Oh, God.
And I think it's because they're putting more people on hold.
So it's not just 50-50.
Exactly. I think they're like putting like 6 or 7 people on hold, which is a little messed up because if they want me to respect their time and clear my schedule, then they should respect my time.
I see that more and more, too. Like, okay, I have to tell you, this was my one experience. So I told you about my experience with acting class.
Mm-hmm.
This was my one experience with almost getting an acting job.
Okay, great. I love it.
So I used to play a regular poker table here in LA.
Uh-huh.
Early on, when I was first doing science communication, I hadn't really decided I was going to make a career out of it. I was always going to go back to school, whatever. It was like a fun thing I was trying on the side. And I was supporting myself. I was dating a person who was very well off.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very controlling and was like, I don't want you to have a normal job. And it was very tough because it reflects poorly on me, whatever. So I was like, fuck, what do I do? So I was supporting myself playing poker. It was like a year of my life where all my money was in cash in my sector. It was very strange. So I'm at this poker table and there was a girl there named Jean who I loved to death. She was the only other female player and she was hardcore. She cleaned up and she was an actress. And she was like, Kara, I was looking in the trades or in the whatever. Yeah, whatever they are. And she was like, I saw some sort of a thing that was a call for a Kara Santa Maria or Olivia Munn type.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And I was like, first of all, to be in the same sentence as Olivia Munn. It's like amazing. And second of all, what the fuck? I haven't heard about this and that's my name. And so I called my agent and I was like, reach out to these people. So he reached out and they were like, oh my God, we're so glad we found you. We've been looking for your agent. We couldn't find him, blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, I was new, sort of. Yeah. So I guess I was known for some of my science work,
but
I wasn't.
Oh, this is incredible.
It's amazing. So it was for a big company, a camera company, and it was an AR, an augmented reality web campaign. And the way it was is you had three auditions. First, you auditioned for the casting director. Mm-hmm. So I auditioned for the casting team. We love you. We love you. You're our top choice. But of course, we have to show the client multiple people or the production company. So then you audition for the production company. We love you. Love you. Love you. But we have to show the client multiple options. And so the last is between we went to the client. The client, we love you. We love you. And I guess I was on a veil, but I didn't know what any of those words meant. And they called me the night. It wasn't even that I was on a veil. I was like booked for it. They were like, these are the dates. These are blah, blah, blah. They called me the night before. And the producer woman was like almost in tears. And she was like, I'm so sorry. I know that we were geared up for this. I don't know how to tell you this, but they decided to go in another direction. They want a guy.
Oh my God.
And I was like,
they have to pay you. If it's the night before, they have to pay you.
See, I didn't know that.
They should definitely pay you if it's a union job. Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I was like, I can't even book a Kara Santa Maria type.
That's
bad.
That's insane that it was your name and you didn't get it. That's adorable.
So I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm an actor.
You're just not enough like her. But I am her. Guys, you're not enough like yourself.
I bet you there are like big time like celebrities who that happens to all the time.
Oh yeah, I've heard similar stories before where people go out for their type and then they don't get it. It's just so messed up.
And this was just like a dumb camera commercial, but I'm sure there are like big movie roles.
Oh
for them.
Yeah,
like they write for Charlize Theron and then they're like, it's not quite right. That's so weird.
Yeah, it's a weird industry. And part of, you know, I get people who are like, but you signed up for this. And I'm like, yeah, I did sign up for it. But it has taken an unexpected turn lately. And it is harder.
Oh, it's a different world right now.
Yeah.
And it's that's the case for a lot of people. A lot of people in education are saying that right now. A lot of people in, you know, coal mining or something.
Yes. You talk to a lot of people in coal mining.
I do all the time. Coal mining. It's like, yeah, it's my favorite.
Your coal mining club on Tuesday nights. I know about it.
But it's also one of those things where I don't know. I have a special place in my heart for, I think it's human nature, right? It's a tribalistic human nature thing to like love to hate people, which just sucks.
Yes,
and there are people
are
who are very easy to hate.
Yes.
But then there are so many people for whom they are very talented and they are doing their jobs. And for whatever reason, they landed a big thing or for whatever reason, you know, and it's the same kind of thing. Well, they signed up to be famous. They signed up to have paparazzi waiting in their driveway every day. They signed up to not be able to live a normal life. And I'm like, no, they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't. They were just doing their job
exactly.
And got really good at it or happened to get very lucky.
Usually it's that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's what I hear from the big A-list celebrities who, because of like previous relationships, I've met a lot of people. I'm not friends with any of them now, but I've had conversations with a lot of people. And the common theme of the ones that were really gracious and that were like really badass was that like, everybody, like there are a million talented people.
Yes.
They're like, I'm no more talented than people who fucking bust their ass and work hard. I'm more lucky.
Yeah.
And I have to remember that every day.
Exactly.
Yeah. I got that role over them and that role catapulted me into this role. And yeah. And so
you just don't know which path it's going to be. It's not. And there are other careers like this, but not a lot where the path is not clear. It's so muddled and you don't know which decision is the right decision. Like you hear stories about people turning things down.
And whole network's doing that.
Yeah. And like, why'd you turn that down? Like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend got turned down like 16 times or something by other networks.
And it's such a cult hit. Like people love that
show. And like, I know like Michael Keaton, P.S. he's fine, but like he was supposed to be the lead in Lost. And he was like, no, the show isn't going to be anything. And then it was like a huge show.
Yeah.
Like people are just like, no, I'm not going to do that. I also heard the Sia song Chandelier was originally written for Rihanna. And she was like, no, I don't want to do this. Again, amazing. Rihanna's also fine. I'm giving poor examples. But like, it was a huge song.
But we give those examples because those are the ones we know.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Yeah. But it's true. I mean, and you've just got to navigate it, making the best decisions you know for yourself. And a lot of times you're making decisions based on where you are in your life.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's weird things you don't even know about that are happening behind the scenes. Like, I once had 1 year during pilot season, which is when they cast all the new shows. I was testing for two shows, which means it was down to like me and a couple other people for a lead on a show called Living on a Prayer, which never went anywhere, and a lead on the show. Oh God, it was a huge show. Now I'm forgetting what
was
it
about.
Adam Pally was on it, and Casey Wilson. Happy Endings. Okay. Happy Endings. Thank you. Woo, okay. For Happy Endings. So I was testing for Happy Endings and for this other show. And they were like, this one tests first, so you have to decide if you want the other one or not. Yeah. And I was like, I wasn't allowed to do both. But the chances of me getting both were very small. And the chances of both of them going from pilots to TV shows were also very small.
But you're not going to get any of that info to make an informed decision.
I didn't.
It's
exactly.
It's all after the fact.
And I loved the Living on the Prayer pilot because it was about the Bon Jovi song Living on a Prayer, and I thought the role was written for me. I was like, this is my dream to do this show. Like, this was meant to be. I'm supposed to be in this show. And I was like, this is the one I choose, hands down. Obviously, that show, I didn't book either of them, by the way. That show went nowhere, though. And the other show was on for like several seasons.
Yeah.
But how would I have known at that point? I could have, like, again, it was fine because I didn't wind up getting either of them, but I could have made a life-changing decision. Like, anyone else in that position could have made a decision that like drastically improved or ruined the rest of their life.
Well, and that's how it is for all these people, which is why you have agents and you have managers and you have all these people to help you make it. But ultimately it's up to you.
Ultimately, but I just didn't know enough. And they were like, well, the producers on this other one are better, but this one,
yeah, everybody has a formula.
Exactly.
For what they
think. You're like, you don't know what's going to go and what's not going to go.
And also, I don't know about you, but for me, when it rains, it pours. Like, I have dry spells of months and months where there's no work and nothing's coming. And I'm like, thank goodness I'm kind of good with money, because if I weren't, I'd be fucked. And then I'll get like six offers, maybe not that many. I'll get like three offers at the same time.
But that's huge.
And you have to choose.
Yeah.
Because you can't do them all. Yeah. You try to do them all, but a lot of them are like, have exclusivity clauses.
Exactly.
And first, you know, position clauses, and you'd make the best with what you
can. And
a
lot of it is the power of no, too, which was a really hard lesson for me to learn. Saying no to doing too much at once, first of all, because then all your projects are going to suffer if you're spreading yourself too thin.
Because it is a zero-sum game when it comes to your time.
Exactly. Yeah. And also just saying no to some things that are like, you know what? I need money right now, but that's below my rate. And if I continue to do things under my rate, then people are going to think that's what I'm worth, and I'm worth a lot more.
So, you know, it's funny. I've mentioned this on the show before, and I feel like it bears repeating. We talk a lot, because I'm a freelancer, and so we talk a lot about, like, the freelancer lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And all actors are freelancers.
Yeah.
You know, that is what it is. And I learned once from Ed Yong, but I think he actually got it from Liz Neely. So it's hard to know where the origin of idea, but they call it the three P's. And it's kind of like words to live by for freelancers, which is when it comes to a job, and this was coming from science writers, so journalists who sell stories to outlets. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to a job, there are three P's that you have to think about. Payment. Mm-hmm. How much money are you going to make? Prestige, you know, is it something that a lot of eyes are going to see and it's going to elevate you as a brand? And passion, is it something that you really care about? And you cannot take a job unless two of the three are fulfilled.
Yeah.
Because if you only do it for one, you're always selling yourself short.
I agree. And I'm glad you said two of the three and not three out of three. Because you'd never work.
Yeah, three out of three is like a unicorn.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's okay to maybe make a little bit below your rate if it's your passion project.
Absolutely.
And you know that it's going to be like a cult hit, or there's, you know, it already has a fan base. Like podcasting. A lot of people podcast. Mm-hmm. They don't make their rate when they podcast.
Right.
But they do it because it maintains an audience and all that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those are all, you have to weigh these things, especially now in this new environment. Like, for example, I used to say yes to everything. Like, even like, can we be in this video for free for me and blah, blah, blah. And I used to be like, yeah, I'll help you out, blah, 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 blah. And then I was like, I can't do all these like comedy videos from like, not only friends, but like friends of friends. Like, I'm just enough. I can't do all this stuff. So I started saying no. And now I'll say no to even friends. I'm like, unless you're like one of my best friends, or you're paying me, or this is someone a director I really want to work with, I'm sorry, but no. And that was a really hard place for me to come to.
It's so hard, because I think, especially as women, and not just women in the industry, but women, I don't think societally, culturally, even within families, we're often taught negotiating skills. We're not taught basically what our time is worth.
Yes.
Because we're domestic, right? We are meant to raise children, or we're meant to cook in the kitchen. And there's even a New York Times study that came out recently that when we're young, girls get less allowance than boys.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
I saw
and
that.
They tend to do more domestic tasks. And so I think we're trained from an early age to feel like we should be saying yes to everything. And people will, I feel for women who are just starting in their path because, but it'll be good exposure.
Yeah.
Young writers, fuck young actors. Yeah, fuck that, you guys.
Like you do need the experience early on. Like you do. You need experience being on sets. But like when people start using that as an excuse every time, like this is going to be great exposure.
No, fuck that. That's why you take jobs. That's the thing.
Exactly.
You want to start off, you want to become a producer and you don't know how. Be a PA. It's very easy to get PA jobs in this town. They pay shit, but at least you're getting paid legally for the work
that
you're
doing. Exactly, and you're learning.
And you're learning an awful lot as a PA. And good PAs rock it fast.
It's hard. Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard to... Yeah, you that it's saying earlier, you were talking about like your PA could be your boss later. Like I've had that situation where a former PA is now a director, which is amazing.
Yeah, one of my ex-boyfriends, EP, was his... assistant.
That's amazing.
Yeah, his personal assistant. Who just you know, and I don't think that's uncommon.
One of my talking about, we also have to know our worth as women and as people. But a friend of mine, a female, told me an interesting, I had lunch with her recently and she was like, you know, there's this guy that she's a writer and this guy is a writer that she knows. And the guy was always like, hey, can I send you some stuff and you give me notes on it? Which is something that like friends who are writers do. Like I've done that to friends and vice versa though.
Those writers have also sent you stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. And for whatever reason, she gave him notes on a couple things over the years and he could hire her, but he has the level in his job that he could have hired her on many shows.
As a writer's assistant or like going
through the course. Or a writer. Staff writer level. Yeah. She could be a full writer on these shows. And it was definitely open where he was like, I'll read anything that you have that you want to give me notes on. But for whatever reason, she didn't want to send them to him. Sometimes you don't trust someone's opinion or you don't trust
that they'll steal your ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. Or she just didn't have anything at the time or whatever. She just didn't want to send him things. But he was always like, I love you're so funny and I love your jokes and blah, blah, blah. And will you like look at this? And then recently she just said, you know what? No, I'm not going to look at that unless you're going to pay me or hire me on one of your shows.
Basically she's punching up his scripts and then he's using those jokes.
Exactly. Yeah. For free.
Yeah.
And he flipped out on her. And was like, what? This is just like a cool relationship where like you send me stuff and I send you. She's like, I'm not sending you stuff.
Yeah.
She's like, I did this with knowing that you like my work. And I did it as an investment, knowing that you could hire me later because you like my work, which you obviously do because you keep asking me to punch things up for you.
Yeah, it's not like this wasn't strategic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And after years of doing this, you're still A, not paying me and B, not hiring me on any of these jobs. It's so fucked up and how entitled so many people think they are to free labor.
That is what privilege is.
That's exactly what
that is exactly what privilege is. It's being able to be in a position where you can get what you want and not give people what they're worth. And it's so frustrating because in a way, I think it's built into capitalism. It's a problem of, Yeah, of the system we live in, which is that people are going to try to figure out how to make the most money and pay people the least.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we have to figure out. And because things like that hiring her on a job would not have cost him any money out of his pocket.
Exactly.
Like that's just like a smart business thing to do. Like, I like the way this woman writes. I should hire her on this show.
But that sometimes you see these really weird gender like control.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
It's so uncomfortable. I've seen that with a lot of friends and it's really the power of no is really important.
Absolutely.
Know? And it's a skill we all have to learn. Sometimes I wish that there were more opportunities for young women in any industry, but especially in industries where they have to advocate for themselves heavily, that there were more opportunities to kind of learn some of these life skills that we don't learn in high school and we don't often learn in the family.
It's so important. Yeah. Absolutely. Like I had to do this today. This morning, someone emailed me and was like, I have this idea for a short film and I love your writing. I want you to write it. And I was like, wait, are you offering to hire me? Like, I don't want to do it unless this person pays me. But I wrote them back and the first draft of the email back was like, hey, thank you so much that you love my work. And wow, what a lovely compliment. And like, I love your work too. Yeah. And then I was like, why am I like sucking this guy's dick. Like, what? And this is not how a man would respond to this email. I just said, thanks so much for the offer. Are you paying?
Yeah, exactly.
And like, that's all I need to say to this guy because he's not a friend of mine. But and I'm not being a dick to him. I'm just like, are you paying?
Yeah, you're just being matter of fact.
Yeah,
but what
exactly.
We find ourselves doing is like apologizing.
That's exactly what it was. It had so many apologies in it and so many like compliments. And I was like, why? No, I don't need this. I just want to know, are you paying me or do you want me to write this on spec? Because I don't have time to write it on spec.
And I'm so sick of people expecting that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know you and I'm not going to. Yeah.
People write things on spec when it's their baby.
Exactly.
You don't write somebody else's baby
exactly.
on spec. And by the way, if you don't know, on spec means you're writing it for free now in the hopes that you'll sell it later
exactly.
and get paid.
Exactly.
Which is not a good business model.
Right.
And there are certain jobs that require it. I mean, that's what an audition is. An audition is going to work on spec.
Exactly.
If it's union, do you get paid for auditions?
No, you get paid on a third callback.
On the third callback.
Which is
okay.
very rare to even have a third callback.
It's like so much, again, so much of what I do is non-union. But if I do union work, the thing is too, when you do hosted stuff, as you've probably found, you almost never audition.
Yeah, it's more just straight to offer from
straight
stuff
offer.
You've done.
Or chemistry tests.
Yeah, chemistry tests I've done.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of auditions for, and I get very bitter if I have to audition for hosting stuff now, because I'm just like,
me too.
Either you like me or you don't.
Yeah, it's like, look at my reel.
Like this shit's out there. Like, I'm not going to read this cue card any differently than I've read a cue card in the past.
And I get bitter when it's like, they don't even have the decency to be like, come into the office when they're like on Wilshire.
Oh,
and instead
God.
They're like, can we do a Skype call? And I'm like, no.
No. Sorry.
It's kind of like I don't know if you've seen I guess it's not a GIF, it's a meme of the blue ribbon that says like, I survived a meeting that could have been an email.
That's amazing. That's like, it's that. Yeah, yeah.
That's like the Hollywood version.
There's so many of those.
So
yeah. Or
many.
Like first call auditions where they're like not even filming you. They're just like, it's someone in an office. They call these pre-reads and you go into an office and you read with the casting director. Luckily, I don't do a lot of these anymore because I'm at that point in my career. And if I do get one, I call my agent. I'm like, that was a pre-read.
Yeah.
Did you know that was a pre-read?
Yeah.
You literally go into their office and they will read with you. There's no camera rolling and they will be looking down at the script, reading the lines and never look up at you. And I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah. That's so weird.
It's why did I go through the trouble of prepping this audition
Ugh.
When I'm sitting in a room and you're not even looking at me?
It's such a waste of time and money. You know, I auditioned for American Idol when I was 16.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
My friends made me do it. That's the line I'm going to continue to use. It was season two.
Oh my God.
Old.
Did you make it on camera at all?
No, because I got four callbacks.
That's amazing.
Which is crazy. But what I discovered, at least back then, so this was the season that like Ruben stuttered and Clay Aiken. So what I discovered was that they only show in the first episode the people who go to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who get the final callback and the people who are ridiculous making a fool of themselves.
Exactly.
And I wasn't ridiculous. I was a competitor, but I didn't get that cut. So they did film it all, but it was the similar process. Like the first was just culling. It was cattle call.
Yeah.
It was like 10 people
I've heard people.
Yeah. Step forward, sing three lines, step backward. So, but then eventually they become a little more sophisticated. You're alone in the room. They're rolling cameras. You're interacting with the judges and stuff. But
that's crazy.
Such a nightmare. I think about, talking about decisions that we make. If I had made that show, my life would
be life would be so different.
And it would, I don't think for the better.
That's the other thing. That's what I mean. Like a lot of these for the better, for the worse, you don't know.
No, I don't think I ever would have gone to grad school. I never would have become a scientist. I wouldn't be working on my PhD now. I wouldn't have the SciComm career I have. And also like they would own my ass.
That's the other thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for all those shows. The contracts are bonkers.
Contracts are bonkers. And that's something that as a creative producer, like those of you who have podcasts out there, who have YouTube channels or who've even dabbled in this, you know, like, you've got to figure out how to own your shit and not sell it to somebody else.
And also, like, they do take advantage of people a lot because the cutoff age is like 30 or something. Like, those people are really young. So they don't really know what they're signing. And they're new.
I was 16.
Which is,
I had to have my parents co-sign.
And they don't know what they're signing. They're not looking at entertainment contracts.
No, these people
unless
are
they're lawyers.
None of them have agents. And it's literally like, we own your ass.
Yeah.
And also,
that's
you're
all it
a
says.
Shill for Coca-Cola. Like, that's all it says. Well, Allison, what are you working on right now?
I'm writing a lot, like I said, and I have a new show out on a new network called the Brew Dog Network.
Oh.
You can find it online or on your phones. There's an app for it. And the
Brew Dog, like B-R-U?
B-R-E-U, like brewing beer.
Gotcha.
It's a network focusing on beer and drinking, and my show is called Are You Smarter Than a Drunk Person?
Yes. And are you the drunk person?
No, I'm the host.
Are you also drunk?
No, I'm totally sober. Mostly. No, but we pair a genius, a bona fide genius, with someone of average intelligence. But the genius is very drunk and it's a trivia show. So we see who wins, a drunk genius or a sober, normal person.
Okay, I don't want you to give anything away because I have to watch this. This is so great. But is it like always the same or is it totally a crapshoot?
It's a crapshoot.
That's awesome.
It really is a crapshoot. And it's just bar trivia, but again, with that caveat that one person's a genius and they're drunk. So it's funny because sometimes they'll know it, but they can't recall it.
They're like getting so mad.
Yeah, exactly. But then sometimes it's like pop culture stuff. They're like, I could be, you know, either one knows it.
Oh, because sometimes geniuses, like I interview a lot of geniuses.
Yeah,
on my
exactly.
Show.
So, you know, they and might not know, like,
they're not really aware of what's happening in the world. It's actually, that's what I love about Talk Nerdy is that oftentimes I get these rare, I mean, they really are rare. So it wouldn't seem like it when you look at my Rolodex of people mm-hmm. who have been on the show, but these rare gems of people who are simultaneously brilliant and can talk.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, can hold a conversation.
It really is just different parts of the brain for some reason.
Well, gosh, that sounds like so much fun.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah,
that's awesome. So, that's kind of the newest thing that you have out.
Yeah,
right,
and I also have a children's show coming out that is on Netflix called Best Worst Weekend Ever. I play the mom in that show, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, scripted?
Yeah, scripted.
Oh, how fun. Yeah. And do you know when that airs yet?
I think it comes out in October.
That's so soon.
But I could be wrong.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Also, it's really soon because I think that this airs in October.
Okay, then it's now. Then it's out. Check it out. But it's a kid's show. It's for like I would say like 10 to 15.
I love that. So. Oh, very cool. Well, congrats.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks
and spending
for having me.
So much time.
Oh, there is one other thing I want to promote.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I also have a business.
Okay.
Called Access Improv. And we're based in Los Angeles. And we go into people's offices and do team building improv comedy exercises. And we get people to communicate better and listen better and just work smarter.
Okay. I have to say, first of all, that's amazing. Second of all, the reason I'm saying that's amazing is because I recently took an improv class. I was really scared and I always had this idea in my head about improv. Like mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do.
Absolutely.
And especially I watched Mike Birbiglia's mm-hmm. movie and I love Mike Birbiglia, but I was like, this is insufferable. I hate all these people. And I think that there is kind of this stereotype.
Oh, absolutely.
Improv, right. And a lot of people are like, I don't want to do improv. That sounds horrifying.
Yes.
Like it's really, but the truth of the matter is, the whole foundation of improv is that everybody is really positive and respectful.
Exactly. It is all about making your partner look better.
Yes.
It's not like stand-up comedy where you are there to make yourself look good. It's about making the other person look better. And the slogan of a lot of improvisers is, I've got your back, because you're just there to have each other's back. And I've found that improv is such an invaluable tool for people in any industry to learn, because it really does help you communicate better. But improv classes are aimed at actors and it's assumed that the person already has some performing experience. So I've taught my workshop. I've gone to a lot of conferences and stuff and taught it, and I've called it improv for people who are terrified of improv.
Love it.
And I try to get those people who are like, oh no, I would never take the improv class, to be like, this is for you. Like, I promise I'm going to be gentle on you. I'm not going to throw you up and have you do like a 2-person scene right off the bat.
Yeah.
And we start off with like very easy games and people don't even realize they're improvising 10 minutes in, but they are. And then I'm like, you don't even realize it, but you're also funny. And the changes I'll notice in just a 2-hour workshop are so fascinating, because inevitably the person who is the most shy is the one who makes the biggest change in just a short amount of time.
That's amazing. And it's so funny that you can bring somebody out of a shell or show them that they have a skill that they didn't know they had, that can have a lasting effect on their entire
Absolutely.
Lives.
And it's just the responses I get every single time I teach one of these workshops, I get teary eyed at the end because Aww. Of the things that people say, because I'm just like, you had this in you the whole time and you didn't know it. And you didn't even know that this was it. I mean, you're improvising now. There's no script to this conversation.
Yeah.
So you're improvising in your everyday life and you don't even realize it.
And no matter what you do for a living, like you said, it can be so helpful because everybody has to communicate. And whether you're talking about
exactly.
interfacing with the public, like you're in sales or you work a counter or something and you have to actually talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
But even behind the scenes, you have to talk to your coworkers. Maybe you're getting to be a new manager or you're in a work
yeah.
group.
And even your spouse or your partner. Mm-hmm. I mean, our lives are relationships. Even if you work alone, it's going to help you. It's going to help you change the way you think and you know, be a better person in your external relationships. Yeah. So
that's so cool. So how can people find out about it?
It's the company's called Access Improv and the website is accessimprov.com. So check it out.
Yeah. And we have to talk about doing that at SciComm Camp next year. It would be so
much
fun.
That would be so fun.
Yeah. I know that. We would eat it up. We would love it so much. Awesome. Well, Allison, where else can people find you? Like all over the, you know, social
medias? I'm not on Facebook, but I am on Instagram and Twitter and it's at the Allison Becker.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This was so much
fun. Thank you. It was so fun.
Yes. And everybody listening, thank you for coming back week after week. I'm really looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.